Okay, so we are beginning the new perek on Kuf Tes Vav Amud Aleph, 16th perek we're starting. The main subject of this perek is what happens if a fire breaks out on Shabbos. Now, obviously, you can't put out the fire unless there's Pikuach Nefesh involved. If there's Pikuach Nefesh involved, then obviously, then you put it out or you call the fire department or whatever it is. But if there's no Pikuach Nefesh involved, for example, now obviously you could have where the fire is in a warehouse or something, but you could also have where the fire is in your own house, but just, you know, you're able to get everybody out safely. So then just in order to save your property, there's no heter to put out the fire or even to call the fire department, as we'll talk about later on in the perek. If they themselves come, that's different. And then the Rambam, as the Rambam phrases it, then you have to just let the fire burn, even if it burns down the entire city. So there's no matter of Pikuach Nefesh. Now, within that though, the Chachamim also made certain gzeiros, as we're going to go through throughout the perek, to restrict what you're allowed to save in the case of a fire. And the idea behind it being that that the Gemara is going to eventually say that when there's a fire breaks out, a person is in a panic, they're likely to just forget completely that it's Shabbos. And if you allow them to carry out anything, then they may forget that it's Shabbos altogether and put out the fire or carry things or do other malachas d'oraisa, like carrying into Rosh Hashanah or whatever. And therefore, the Chachamim made rules and restrictions what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do in terms of saving things. Tosfos actually mentions over here that all of the dinim we're going to learn about are only when the fire is in, only when you're talking about in the house or the chotzer where the fire is taking place. On the other hand, if let's say, for example, you have your neighbor's house is on fire, then Tosfos says you'd be allowed to do anything. You'd be allowed for as far as your own things. Now, let's say you're concerned eventually the fire is going to spread to your house, so you want to start carrying out things. Fine, then you're allowed to carry out whatever you want. Obviously, you can still only carry it to a place where you're allowed to on Shabbos, a place we have an Erev with or whatever. But we're not going to have the various restrictions of our perek are not going to be applicable there where the fire is not in your house or your chatzar yet. So that's the basic topic of our perek. At the end, we're going to talk a little bit about the dinim, what happens when a goy does something for a yid, because we're going to talk about what happens when goyish firefighters come to put out the fire, and then that's going to lead us into a more general discussion of a goy doing something for a yid on Shabbos. But today's Gemara, mostly we're going to be not really focusing so much on the fire matter, but rather on the Mishnah begins, Kol Kisvei HaKodesh. So we're mostly going to be focusing today and part of tomorrow on different dinim involving Kisvei HaKodesh, and that involve books of Torah. So the Mishnah starts off, Kol Kisvei HaKodesh Matzilin Oysan Mipnei Adleika. Any holy books, meaning books, Rashi says, of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. Don't just think that these dinim, that the coolest that we're going to say in our Mishnah, apply only to books of Torah. No, they apply also to Nach. Matzilin Oisim Mipnei Adleika. You save them from a fire on Shabbos. And in and of itself, there's not that much chiddush that you save them. The point is, Rashi says, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah that it means even you're allowed to carry them into a mavoi, which is not fully set up for Shabbos, which doesn't have a lechi or a koda or whatever. So on a derabbanan level, usually you wouldn't be allowed to carry there, but for this purpose, because they're kisvei hakodesh, then the chachamim allow. Bein shekodin behen, whether they're the kind that are actually read from in public. For example, Rashi says books of Nevi'im, which are used for reading the Haftorah in shul. Bein she'ein kodin behen, or whether you don't read from them. Now, what do you mean you don't read from them? So Rashi says ksuvim. We don't read ksuvim in public in shul. I mean, so in later times, they're developed based on Masechta Sofrim. They've developed the minhag to lay in Rus and Kehelas and Shir Ashirim in shul on the different Yom Tovim. But other than that, and of course, okay, you have also Megillas Esther and Megillas Eicha, which is required, but that's not a regular thing that you do. At any rate, you don't read on them on Shabbos in shul. So in Kodin Behen means ksuvim. Rashi says that actually the Mishnah is going to go on to say that. Well, so let's finish the Mishnah and then we'll talk about what Rashi's Rebbeim say. So the Mishnah continues, Afal Pishak Suvim B'chol Loshen, even if they're written in any language, which we're going to have a machlokus in the Gemara, if they're written in other languages, are you B'chol allowed to read them? Now, this is back in the day when you weren't allowed to write Torah Shebaal Peh. And writing it in another language amounts to making it into Torah Sheva'al Peh. In later times, there eventually became the point, we say, Eis Lasis LaHashem, that you had to do, you had to act on behalf of Hashem, because otherwise the Torah is going to be forgotten. That was the heter in the first place to write down Torah Sheva'al Peh, for example. So then it also became mutter when necessary to write Sfarim, to write books of Tanakh in other languages, because to write books of Torah in other languages, because otherwise people aren't going to understand them. So Tosfos, for example, uses the expression Sfarim Shalonu, or Sfarim you're allowed to save because Eis Lasis LaHashem. So Bapashtos, either Tosfos means books of Torah Sheva'al Peh, like Gemaras and whatnot, or Tosfos means translations of Tanakh, which apparently they had in those times also, like translations into French or Yiddish or whatever they spoke at that time. Anyway, to unin gniza, they require gniza. Now we're going to see in the Gemara what the loshen in the Mishnah means. When we say afapisha kohen b'chol loshen to unin gniza, is that referring back to what you're allowed to save on Shabbos, or is it referring ahead to unin gniza? Whatever language they're written in, you do have to put them in Shemus when they wear out. We'll see that in the Gemara. Continues the Mishnah. Now, why do you not read Ksuvim? The reason is because it's going to prevent people from learning in the Beis Medrash. Meaning like this. On Shabbos, all week long, the Balabatim are busy working. So they didn't have much time to learn. They didn't have much time to learn Torah, and in particular to learn Halacha. On Shabbos, they would have public drushes where they would teach them the Halachas. Or whatever. So therefore, now what's going to happen? On the other hand, you have Ksuvim, and Ksuvim, parts of Ksuvim are very, very interesting. In fact, you have the Mishnah tells us in Yuma that on Yom Kippur night, when the Kohen Gadol had to stay up all night, how would they keep, one way they would keep him busy is they would read to him various parts of Ksuvim. They would read to him, they would read to him Eov and Daniel and Divrei Yomim and different things of Ksuvim that are very interesting. So what's going to happen if you will, so the Chachamim therefore made a takana that you should not be. So again, Rashi has two explanations. One is that therefore we don't read from them publicly in shul, and the idea is, in other words, if we had like this, we have a haftorah from Nevi'im, and then the reason behind that is because of a takana, because not a takana. Well, it is a takana because one time there was a gzeira from some goyish king that you can't read Torah in public, and therefore they managed to get away with reading Nevi'im instead. So, but Ksuvim, they didn't do that, and then they didn't want to also add that there should be a portion of Ksuvim read, because then that's going to cut into the time available for the Beis Medrash. Then the other explanation Rashi brings from his Rebbeim, Rabbeinu Halevi, is that it means not only we don't read Ksuvim in public in shul, but we don't want Yechidim to be reading them either at home. Because again, same idea. In other words, they're very interesting. And therefore, that people are going to be interested, people are going to get into reading Ksuvim. Well, Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Melachim, Yeshaya, Yumi, Yechezkel, and Treyaser, those are all Nevi'im. And then Ksuvim, Artilim, Mishle, Eov, Kehela, the five Megillus, Daniel, yeah. I saw actually an interesting vote. You know, in benching, we say Migdol, and on weekdays we say Migdol Yeshua is Malkoi, and on Shabbos and Yom and Shchodesh and whenever we say Magdol, the other way around. On weekdays we say Magdol, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and whenever we say Migdol. Magdol is a posik from Tilim, which is in Ksuvim. Migdol is a posik from Shmuel, which is in Nevi'im. So they say a vote on that's related to this, since we're saying that you're not supposed to read Ksuvim on Shabbos. So okay, I mean, Lamaisa, we have lots of Tilim and Davening and whatever, fine, but that's a fixed part of Davening, that's different. But as a remembrance of this thing, that we don't read Ksuvim on Shabbos, therefore we change the posik in benching and instead use the posik from Nevi'im rather than the posik from Ksuvim. Anyway. So the vort is, therefore, Rashi says, his Rebbe explained, that therefore it's not just that we don't read Ksuvim in public in shul, we don't want people privately reading them at home either, because that's going to be, they're going to get more into that, and then they're not going to come to the Beis Medrash to learn the necessary halachos that they need to know. And then as far as the Targum part, so we're saying to unin gniza, we're saying, in other words, you can't just leave them out in the open. You have to put them in gniza. And again, we're going to see in the Gemara if that refers to the ones that are written in other languages as well. So Rashi also brings from his Rebbeim that maybe the ones that are written in other languages, it's not such a problem to read, because after all, we find that Yonas and Ben Uziel translated Nevi'im. So obviously a translation of Nevi'im is no problem to have around. as opposed to ksuvim. The Gemara tells us that Yonas and Menazir wanted to translate ksuvim and was told min hashamayim not to do that. Rashi says, though, I don't like that explanation, because the fact of the matter is, even if we assume that Yonas and Ben Oziel composed the Targum on the Nevi'im, that doesn't mean he wrote it. That just means he composed it Baal Peh. So it wasn't necessarily meant to be written down. So therefore, when our Mishnah is saying, even if they're written, when the Mishnah is saying that if they're written in any other language, and the implication is you're not allowed to read them, yes, that would apply even to the Targum of Nevi'im, because again, in those times, it was part of Torah Shebaal Peh. It was meant to be said verbally, but not written down. Why don't you read Ksuvim and Bitul Beis Medrash? Because then you're going to keep people away from the Beis Medrash where they need to be learning. They need to be learning Hilchas Issev Hetter. Okay. So the Gemara starts off Itma. Hoyu Ksuvim Targum Oy B'Chaloshin. If Ksuvim, or Rashi says maybe all Kisvei HaKodesh, were written in Targum or in any other language. So if you had an Aramaic translation of Torah or Nevi'im or Ksuvim or any other language translation written out, what is the din of them as far as saving them from a fire on Shabbos? Rav Huna Amar Ein Matzil Noisim Mipnei Adleika. Rav Huna says you're not allowed to save them from a fire on Shabbos. But Rav Chista Amar Matzil Noisim Mipnei Adleika. And Rav Chista says you could. So, let's figure out their machlokes. Aliber demanda amar nitnu likris behen. If we follow the opinion that you're allowed to read sfarim that are written, sifrei kodesh, that are written in other languages, namely, Rashi says like this, you have a Mishnah in Megillah that says that there's no difference between sfarim, meaning sfarim of Tanakh, versus tefillin and mezuzahs. The only difference is, because all of them have to be written on parchment, all of them have to be written with ink, etc., but Sfarim you're allowed to write in any language. Tefillin and mezuzahs have to be written dafka in Lashon Kodesh. So in other words, it comes out, Rashi says, you have a machlokes whether you're allowed to write them in other languages. So if you say according to the Tanna Kamma that you're allowed to write them in any other language, which is called nitnu likris behen, you're allowed to read such books of Tanakh, well then, dekula amalei pligi dematzil, and then everybody would agree. Of course, if you're allowed to read them during the week, then they're considered to have kedusha, and therefore you're allowed to save them on Shabbos. Ki pligi alibi demanda amalei nitnu likris behen. The machloikus would be within Reb Shimon Gamliel's opinion, which is that Reb Shimon Gamliel says over there, the only language that you're allowed to write sforim in, other than Lashon Kodesh, is Greek. And we don't mean, by the way, modern Greek. We mean the kind of Greek, ancient Greek, which was a very, very, very beautiful language. Yafta lekim leyefes v'yishkan ba'olei shem. That the beauty of Yefes, the beautiful Greek language, can be used to write things that belong in the tents of shame. Now, in later times, the Greek language became corrupted, and nowadays it's just like any other language in the world. But according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, then the only language that you're allowed to write Sfarim in and they're considered to have Kedusha is in Greek. You're not allowed to, according to him, you're not allowed to write Sifrei Kodesh. You're not allowed to translate them into Latin or English or Egyptian or whatever.
Was that Greek like our Hebrew, where you're right from right to left?
They're Greek, no, it was written left to right, like modern Greek. Wait, what are you asking?
I heard.
Well, give me 1 second. One second, Yaakov. The guy over here is asking something. What? Well, fine. That's true. In modern Hebrew, they also add new words. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Right. Languages change over time. Yeah. So, Yaakov, what were you asking?
I heard that Greek was written right to left.
No, not that I. It's conceivable, I suppose, but I never heard of such a thing. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. So according to Rabbi Gamliel, if you're only allowed to write them in Greek, and therefore, in other words, Tosfos says, so now if you write it in any other language, in effect, it's kind of like Torah. You're kind of like making it into Torah Shebaal Peh. Although Tosfos maybe questions that whether that's in fact so. But anyway, according to Rabbi Gamliel, you only have a heter to write them in Greek. Because you have to look in the Yefes. So now, according to within his opinion, so I'll libid amanda omer loin nitnu likris behen. So within the opinion that you're not allowed to read them, Rav Huna omer ein matzil and dohol nitnu likris behen. So Rav Huna is going to say, okay, well then you can't save them because if you're not even allowed to write them in any other language, then you're not allowed to. Then they have no kedusha, and therefore there's no heter to save them on Shabbos, or at least again save them in the sense that we said in our Mishnah, where you're going to be able to carry them to a mavui she'enim afulosh. You're going to be able to carry them to a mavui that's not completely that, that doesn't have a lechi or a koda, where normally you can't, where normally you can't, what do you call it? Where normally you can't carry on Shabbos. So that's Ravuna. Rav Chista, Matzilin, Mishum Bizoyan, Kisvei HaKodesh. Rav Chista says, okay, fine, but after all, there is a Bizoyan of holy writings. Okay, you weren't supposed to write them because you're not supposed to read them, but the fact of the matter is they were written, and now you're going to have, they should get burnt, is not right, and therefore you should be allowed to save them. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see which opinion it fits better according to. The Mishnah says, Kol Kisvei HaKodesh Matzilin Oisim Mifnei Adleika, or Kisvei HaKodesh you're allowed to save from a fire. Whether you're allowed to read from them or whether you're not allowed to read from them, and we said in the Mishnah, even though they're written in other languages, so now shouldn't we assume that the meaning is shekoden behen neviim? The word shekoden behen in the Mishnah refers to neviim, which, as we said, you do read from them publicly. You read from neviim when you lay in the haftarah and shul. But she'ein koden behen ksuvim. Then the word she'ein koden behen would refer to ksuvim, because, as we said, you don't read from them publicly in shul, and in fact the chachamim don't want you to be reading ksuvim on Shabbos afternoon, so you don't miss the drasha when they're teaching hilchos issa v'heter. And the Mishnah says, "Af al pi shekesuvim b'chol loshen," even if they're written in any other language, which seems to imply, therefore, "delon nitnu likros behen." So you're talking about that they're written in other languages, it's ksuvim, and they're not "loin nitnu likros," that they're not given to read. In other words, the point is that we're saying, it actually says, when it says "af al pi," when it says "af al pi shekesuvim b'chol loshen," so the implication is, even though they're a lesser level, and therefore you're not even allowed to read from them. So nevertheless, we're saying that you save them. V'katoni matzilin. So the Mishnah is saying, the Mishnah started by saying that you save them. Utiyuv to Rav Huna. So that would contradict Rav Huna, who says that you can't. The answer is Amalach Rav Huna v'tisbara. Rav Huna says, how could you think that's what the Mishnah means? Ema sefer. Look at the next part of the Mishnah. To unin gniza. We say in the next part of the Mishnah that these svarim that are written in other languages require to be put in gniza. In other words, as Rashi had said in the Mishnah, you don't just put them out when they're worn out. You don't just put them out in the open in a mokum hefker where they're going to get ruined or whatever. So you have to figure, Rav Huna says, hashtat sulim matzilinan. If you're telling me that the Mishnah is saying that these svarim that are written in other languages can be saved from a fire on Shabbos, obviously if they can be saved from a fire, gniza mi boy, would it need to be said that they have to be put in gniza? Obviously then that would be the din. So there'd be no reason for the Mishnah mentioned to unin gniza if the Mishnah had already told us that you even bend the halachos of Shabbos to save them from fire by carrying them to a mavui she'enim afulosh. How much more so then that during the week, if they're worn out, you would put them in Shemus. So Rav Huna says that can't be what the Mishnah means. Rather, when it comes to our Mishnah, Rav Huna and Rav Chista are each going to understand the Mishnah in their own way. Rav Huna Matarit Zatayme, Rav Huna is going to understand it according to his own Shitta. He's going to learn like this. Ben Shekoren Behen means Nevim. Or Ben Sheon Koren Behen means Ksuvim. Fine, that we already established. Bamed Varamam. Then he's going to say, the Mishnah means to say, now it's not even a chsuri mechsura, we're not actually adding words to the Mishnah, we're just saying the Mishnah is going to clarify, what do I mean that both books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim you say, Shksuvim b'Loshen you save, Shksuvim b'Loshen HaKodesh, only if they're written in Loshen Kodesh, only then do they have the din that you bend the halachos of Shabbos to save them from a fire by bringing them to a chotzer she'enim or revis, Avo b'chol Loshen, but if they're written in other languages, Ein Matzilin, then Rav Huna would say the Mishnah is implying you do not save them. In other words, so what's the afal pi Shksuvim b'chol Loshen that it said in the Mishnah means va'afilo hochi gniza bo. They do have to be put in gniza. So, in other words, Rav Huna would say like this: you have the we break the Mishnah after the words she'ein koden behen. You save them whether koden behen or not, namely whether they're neviim or ksuvim. That's if they're in Lashon Kodesh. And you should know, what about if they're written in other languages? If they're written in other languages, then they are toin gniza, but not more than that. They're not. You don't save them from a fire. You don't bend the halachos of Shabbos to save them from a fire. That would be Rav Huna. Rav Chista is going to understand the Mishnah according to his svara. Bein shekoren behen means neviim, or bein shein koren behen means ksuvim. And the Mishnah would continue. According to him, the Afalpichet Kosovim Mechaloshin is a continuation of that. We don't break after She'en Koden Behen like Rav Huna did. We break after Afalpichet Kosovim Mechaloshin, even though they're written in any other language, Nami Matzilin. Also, you save those. Now, what's the Turnin Gniza, which Rav Huna was asking, if Turnin Gniza means at face value that these Sfarim have to be put in Gniza when they wear out, then obviously that would mean you save them for a fire. What's a, if you have, or the other way around, if you save them for a fire, then obviously you put them in Gniza. What's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is, Rav Chista would say, Bahachi Kamar, the last words, Tunin Gniza, mean, Umekek Shalahen Tunin Gniza. Also the rotted away remnants of them, if they start rotting away or getting eaten away by worms or whatever, you need to put that in Gniza as well. Now that part is not usable anymore. Nevertheless, you need to put them in Gniza. So both Rav Huna and Rav Chista have ways of understanding the Mishnah. The Rashba, by the way, brings from a Yerushalmi on this perek that says that if there's no other way to save the Sfarim other than to put out the fire, then according to Rav Shimon, you would actually be allowed to, because Rav Shimon, we've learned before, holds Malacha She'enet Tzricha Legufa is Potter, meaning that it's not also Daraisa, where you're doing the Malacha for a different purpose than it was done in the Mishkan, or a different purpose, or a purpose that you would rather not have been in that situation, or in order to avoid a Hezek, whatever, according to the various definitions of Malacha She'enet Tzricha Legufa that we've talked about before. Putting out a fire where it's burning down your house on Shabbos is an example of Malacha She'enet Tzricha Legufa. According to Rav Shimon, in general, that would be Potter, even if you did it in general, Rav Shimon would say it's only also Drabbanan. And in this case, the Rishabi says, in order to save the Kisvei HaKodesh, if you have no other choice, then you can do that. However, the Rashba says, obviously, our Gemara disagrees with that, because our Gemara does not even mention that as a possibility. Our Gemara is taking it as a given that it's either you're able to save them, either the question, are you able to save them or not? Are you physically able to get them to a Mavush and a Foolish or whatever? Or if not, then you have no choice. You have to let them get burned. So obviously, our Gemara is dealing with the, is disagreeing with the Yerushalmi on that. Morning there. We're holding about the middle of Kuf Tesvav Amud Aleph, about the six lines into the wide lines. Okay, so the Gemara says Mesvi. I have a contradiction now. On Rav Huna, again, Rav Huna is saying that Sforim that are written in other languages, you can't bend the rules of Shabbos to save them from a fire. The only thing you can do is if during the week, if they're worn out, you put them in Shemus. So now, Meisvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Hayuk Suvim Targum, if books of Tanakh were written in Targum, in Aramaic, V'chol Loshen, or in any other language, Matzilin Oisim Mepnei Adlaika, you do save them from a fire on Shabbos. Tiyuvta de Rav Huna. So that's a clear contradiction on Rav Huna. The answer is, Amalach Rav Huna, Haitana Savan Nitnu Likris Behen. Okay, Rav Huna says, fine. We started saying at the beginning of the Sugya that there is a machloikas tanoim, whether you're allowed to write Sfarim of Tanakh in other languages. We said the Tanakama in the Mishnah and Megillah had said that you are, and Rav Shimon Gamliel said you're only allowed to write them in Greek. So therefore, fine. So the Tana of this Braisa is like the Tana Kama in Megillah. He says, Lachatchila, you're allowed to write, not Lachatchila, whatever, that you're allowed to write them in any other language. So therefore, sure, if you're allowed to write them in any other language, you're allowed to read them in any other language. And if you're allowed to read them, then you're allowed to save them. But I'm talking within Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion, who says that you can't. Okay. Toshma, what about, let's look at another braisa. Hoyuk suvim giftis, if the books of Tanakh were written in giftis, which is Egyptian, the word giftis is related to the word Egypt, is related to the word Egypt, modis, or in the language of Modai, which is nowadays part of Iran, Ivris, or in the language in the script of Aver HaNahar, Rashi says, which means Bapashtus, it means Ksav Ivri that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the ancient Hebrew script that you find on inscriptions and coins from the time of the first and the second Bais HaMikdash. Elomis, or so in other words, if it was written in Ivris, it was written in Lashon Kodesh, but using a different script. It could also be that Rashi is referring to like cuneiform or something, like the ancient script that they used to use in Ashur and Bavel and other Middle Eastern civilizations several thousand years ago. Anyway, whatever it is, Elomis, or if you have the books of Tanakh are written in the language of Elam, or Yavonis, or Greek, even though you're not allowed to read from them, then you can still save them from fire. Now here, clearly we're not talking according to Tanakhama in Megillah, because we're saying that you're not allowed to write them in these languages. Now Tosfos points out that that is a third opinion. So far, we had the Tanakhama, who said that you can write any Sfarim of Tanakh in any language. We had Reb Shimon Gamliel, who said that the only language you're allowed to write them in other than Lashon Kodesh is Greek. Tosfos says you have a third opinion, Reb Yehuda, who says that the only one you're allowed to write in Greek is the Torah, because we have the example of the Shivim Skenim, who created the Targum HaShivim, the famous Septuagint. But other than that, the other books of Tanakh, Rabbi Yehuda holds, there's no heter to write in any other language. So our braisa would be according to Rabbi Yehuda then, where, when we say that if they're written in, when they're written in the various languages we mentioned, including Yavonis. So we'd be talking about, let's say you have a book of Tillim or a book of Yeshua or whatever that's translated into Greek, Rabbi Yehuda would hold you weren't allowed to write that in the first place. You're not allowed to read from it. As opposed to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would hold that you are because it's Greek, and the Tanakhama over there would hold you're allowed to because it's any language. Anyway. So this braisa is saying that you're not allowed to read from them, and it's still saying matzilin oisin of me'ad leika. You're still allowed to save them from fire on Shabbos. Tiuvta de Rav Huna. So again, that's a contradiction on Rav Huna. Amalach Rav Huna tanoihi. So Rav Huna will tell you the answer is even within Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion or Rav Yehuda's opinion that you're not allowed to write Sfarim of Tanakh in other languages. Even within that, there is actually a machloikas tanoim whether you still save them from a fire on Shabbos, and therefore, I'm following the Tana who says that you're not allowed to. So this braisa is not a contradiction to me because this braisa is talking according to the other opinion. So what does that mean? First of all, the Tanya, what do we mean by that? Now we learn in a braisa like this. If books of Tanakh were written in Aramaic, by the way, I mean Targum literally means translation, but in Gemara terminology, we usually use the word Targum to mean Aramaic, because that was the language in which Targum Onkelos and Targum Yonis and Menuziel were composed. That was the language they used to translate the Torah when they translated it, and posik by posik when they landed in Shul. So therefore, the word Targum in Gemara terminology often means just Aramaic. In Yiddish, by the way, you have the other way around. You have the word Teich, which comes to mean translation in general, even though it comes from the word Deutsch, which means German. Because again, what was the language that they would usually translate into when Jews lived in Europe was German or Yiddish. So therefore, the word Teich came. So it's sort of the opposite development of this word Targum over here, which started as a general word for translation and ended up meaning Aramaic specifically. Anyway, so the Braisa is saying, if books of Tanakh were written in Targum, in Aramaic, over Choloshen, or in any other languages, Matzilin Oisin Mepnead Leika, you can save them from a fire on Shabbos, Rabbi Yossi and Matzilin Oisin Mepnead Leika, and Rabbi Yossi says you can't. And the Braisa continues, Omer Rabbi Yossi, I'll give you a proof for the idea that you can't save them. Maisa ba'aba chalafta, it happened once with my father chalafta, Rabbi Yossi's father, plain Rabbi Yossi in Shas, is Rabbi Yossi ben chalafta, so his father's name was chalafta. By the way, Achronim talk about the question, so how is he allowed to call his father by his name? So it's the Rabbi Akiva Eger, I think, says, because if you call him by a title and then his name, then you're actually allowed to. So if you're saying, in this case, he's saying Abba, which is the equivalent, which is a title. In those days, it was the equivalent of Rebbe or whatever, so then he's allowed to. Anyway, Maisa ba'aba chalafta, shaholach etzer Rabban Gamliel beribi l'Tveria. He one time visited Rabban Gamliel beribi in Tveria. Beribi means the son of great people. Rashi says it doesn't mean, don't think it means Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rebbe. It means an Adam Gadol is called in Gemara terminology beribi. Anyway, so he went, the Rabban Gamliel we're talking about over here is Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, the Rabban Gamliel who was Nasi after the Churban. The first Rabban Gamliel was Nasi after the Churban. So one time, Reb Chalafta went to visit him, L'Tveria, in Tveria. U'motze shohi yoshev al shulchano sho yoichanan ha-nozuf. He found that Rabban Gamliel was sitting by the table of Yoichanan ha-nozuf. On the side of it, here it says, Rabbi Yoichanan ben Nizuf. Because Yoichanan ha-nozuf itself would mean Yoichanan, the one who was rebuked. And in that case, what's Rabban Gamliel doing by such a person's house? So therefore, it's just Rabbi Yochanan ben Nizuf, that his father's name happened to be Nizuf. Anyway, so Rabban Gamliel was sitting there by his table. of Yod Sefer Eiv Targum. He had with him a book of Eiv that was written in Aramaic. V'hukodabo, and Rav Gamliel was reading from this book and reading the translation of Eiv. Amoloi, Rav Chalafta says to Rav Gamliel, Zohar ani b'Rav Gamliel avi avicha. You should know, I remember your grandfather, Rav Gamliel, which is Rav Gamliel Hazokin, the one who was Nasi still while the Beis Mikdash was standing. One time he was standing on a step in the Harabayis. They view the font of Sefer Eiv Targum. They brought him the same kind of thing. They brought him a book of Eiv, which was written in Aramaic instead of in Lashon Kodesh. He turns to one of the builders and says, put it under the row of stones. At that point, in other words, apparently they were building or renovating the Beis Hamikdash. So he tells him, put it under the row of stones. In other words, hide it away. We're not supposed to have it. So Rabbi Yossi is telling Rabbi Gamliel de Yavne. Therefore, using that precedent, then you shouldn't be reading the Sefer Eiv Targum either. So sure enough, Rabbi Gamliel de Yavne did that as well. He went and hid it away and didn't read from it after that. It's interesting. It's funny, by the way, that we're talking Davka about Sefer Eiv in this connection. The Evan Ezra on a pasuk in Eiv mentions the fact is Eiv is a very, very difficult Sefer to understand. There's a lot of unusual words and a lot of unusual grammatical constructions in there and whatever. So how and Evan Ezra says what it may be is actually that it may have originally been written in Aramaic or some other language. Befrat, that after all, I mean, the major characters in it, it's not even certain that they were Jews. Eiv and Eliphaz and the rest of them, they what? Eiv, the story of Eiv is basically where Eiv is being tested by Hashem. Hashem allows the Sutton to have all his children die and all of his wealth is lost, and Eiv himself gets terrible sicknesses and diseases and whatever. And the most of Sefer Eiv is debates and discussions between Eiv and his friends about how Hashem runs the world. Why is there a tzaddik v'tovloi? Why is there a tzaddik v'daloi? Why is there a rosh v'tovloi? The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it because Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned about that. So he wrote this to explore this idea of to try and understand the various ideas that are out there of how Hashem runs the world. Anyway, the point is that the Evan Ezra says, after all, the characters in the Sefer are not even necessarily Jews. Well, the Evan Ezra doesn't say this part about the characters, but he just says that apparently what it is the Sefer may have been written in some other language to begin with and then translated into Lashon Kodesh, and that's why it's so hard to understand, because you always have something that's translated, never reads quite as smoothly as the original. So according to the Evan Ezra, Eiv itself was originally written in another language, but we have it in Kisvei HaKodesh, in Lashon Kodesh, and therefore Rabbi Yossi is telling, therefore Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chalafta are telling the now telling Rav Gamliel Hazakan, Rav Gamliel the Yavne, that you're not allowed to read it in Targum. Anyway. Yeah, so again, as Tosfos said before, because nowadays we're allowed to write Tosh Bal Peh on the grounds of Eis L'Asas L'Hashem, therefore we're allowed to have translations and we're allowed to have Pirushim that are written and whatever. And actually, by the way, there is an interesting discussion among the Achronim, beginning with the Taz, on the question of what kedusha do printed Sfarim have. All this, we're talking about handwritten Sfarim, because of course in the times of the Gemara, they didn't have printing. But what would be the din as far as printed Sfarim? One thing that the Taz actually quotes something from the Ramah, that maybe in fact the very fact that Sfarim are not printed in the actual letters that they use in Sefer Torah, but rather in a different typeface, in a different font, maybe that was done davka in order that they don't have the same level of kedusha, and that way they don't have, that way you're not so much over on the issue of writing Tosh Bal Peh, that I'm offering such an idea. Anyway, the point is, but back then you didn't have this heter, so you can't have a Sefer Eiv Targum, says Rabbi Yossi, and says his father Rabbi Chalafta. Okay, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a reva shal tit kafu olav. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, when we have in the story of Rabbi Gamliel Azokin, when they brought him the Sefer Eiv Targum, when he was standing in the Har HaBayis, and we said Rabbi Yossi's version of the story was that he told them put it under the row of stones that you're building. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, actually it was different. A reva shal tit kafu olav. What they did is they overturned a container of mortar on top of it, and that way it was destroyed. Omar Rebbe shtei tshuvos b'dava. But Rebbe says, I have two contradictions to that. Chodav v'chitit b'harabayis minayin. Number one, where b'chlal do they have mortar on the harabayis? When they were building on the harabayis, they did not use mortar, which is made out of a mixture of dirt and water. Instead, they used, Rashi says, they used what's called traxid. We learned about it earlier in the Masechta, which is a mixture of sand and lime and plaster. So there's no tit over there in the first place for them to overturn a container of it on top of the sefer. Also, even if we're going to say you're not allowed to read a sefer e of Targum, you can't just destroy it with your bare hands. So you can't be poor. It's one thing maybe to put it under a row of bricks. It's not going to directly destroy it over there. Eventually, it'll rot away over there. But to actually overturn a container of mortar onto it, that not. Mortar, like they use between bricks. Like you look at any brick building here in Crown Heights, the stuff that you have between one brick and another is mortar. Yeah. Okay. So Ella, no, rather what you do, Rebbe says, Manichan Mamokamaturpa, fine, it's true you can't read them. What you do is you leave them out in an open place. Turpa means goloi vehefka, Rashi says, an open hefkadika place. The Hainmar Kivit may lay in and they just end up rotting on their own. Okay. So thus far the Braisa. So now when we say, we have several different opinions in this Braisa. We have the Tanakama of the Braisa who says that even if they're written b'chol loshen, you can save them. You have Rabbi Yossi saying that you can't save them. You have Rabbi Chalafta who's also saying that you can't, and you have to put them under the bricks. You have Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you can actually destroy them by pouring mortar or whatever over them. And you have Rabbi who says that you leave them out in the open. So we have to figure which opinions. Again, why do we bring in this Braisa? Because Rav Huna had said that this that I'm saying, you're not allowed to save them on Shabbos. And on the other hand, you have a Braisa that says that if they're written in Giftis or other languages, you're not allowed to read them, but you do save them from a fire. So Rav Huna is saying these are two different opinions of Tanoim. So that's what we have to figure out. Man Tanoi, who are the Tanoim that Rav Huna is talking about? In other words, the question is, there has to be among these Tanoim, there has to be somebody who agrees with Rav Huna that you're not allowed to save them. And there has to be somebody who agrees with Rav Chisda that even though it's true you're not allowed to read from them, nevertheless you do save them. So which Tanoim are those? Ilema Tanakama de Rabbi Yossi. Are you going to say it means the Tanakama of the Braisa with Rabbi Yossi? So therefore, the Tanakama would be like Rav Chisda, the Tanakama who says that Matzilanoison, and Rabbi Yossi who says Ein Matzilanoison. So those would represent these two opinions of Rav Huna and Rav Chisda. Can't be the Dilma Bahaka Miflegi, because maybe not. Maybe the underlying machloikus between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi is something else. Ma'asava nitnu likras behenu, ma'asava la nitnu likras behenu. Maybe the Tanakama there hold not only that you save them, but you're actually allowed to read them. Maybe Rabbi Yossi, in other words, Rabbi Yossi for sure we know, says you're not allowed to read them, because he's bringing the story where his father, Rabbi Chalafta, says to Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken that you're not allowed to read them. But how do we know? But how do we know that the Tanakama is saying that I agree you're not allowed to read from them? But I agree you're not allowed to read from them, but nevertheless they have Kedusha and therefore you have to save them, which would be Rav Chisda's opinion. Maybe not. Maybe the Tanakhama holds you actually allowed to read a book of Iyov or other books of Nach that are written in Targum. Ela, Rabbi Yossi, Vatana, the gift is to, no. Rather, we have to say that the two Tanoim we're talking about that represent the opinions of Rav Huna and Rav Chisda would be the opinions of Rabbi Yossi from that Braisa and the Tana that mentions about the case where the Sfarim are written in Giftis or the other languages. So both of them are clearly saying you're not allowed to read from them. Rabbi Yossi is clearly saying you're not allowed to read from it. That's why he said that Rabbi Chalafta told Rabbi Gamliel, and I'm telling you, Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken, that you're not allowed to read from it. The Tana of the Braisa with Giftis and those various other languages also said, even though you're not allowed to read from them, you save them from a fire. That is exactly Rav Chisda's opinion. So that's it. So you have the two different opinions. Who is the halacha like? Most of the Rishonim Paskin like Rav Huna on the grounds that Rav Huna is Rav Chisda's Rebbe, and the usual rule is up until the times of Abaya and Rava, we say when you have a machloikus between a Rebbe and a Talmud, then you go according to the Rebbe. So there is a minority of Rishonim who paskin like Rav Chisda, but the majority paskin like Rav Huna. again, nowadays that we have the concept of Eis Lasis Lashem, that we are, that nowadays that we have the concept of Eis Lasis Lashem, that we are allowed to write Torah Sheba'al Peh, because otherwise the Torah would be forgotten. So then you have more latitude with this. Then you have, for example, you are, it is now legitimate to write translations of Torah into other languages, because people poshut need it to learn. If you didn't have, for example, translations of Torah into English, then many people who don't speak Lashon Kodesh would be completely unable to learn Torah. So therefore those have Kedusha, and therefore those are allowed to be written and learned from and saved from a fire. One thing it does mention in the poskim, though, is this only applies to a translation that you're doing taka because the people need it, because otherwise they're not going to understand. It doesn't apply to a translation. Sometimes you have, for example, people do all these kinds of translations into extinct languages or into invented languages or whatever, just for the fun of it. Like you have, for example, you have the type of people that take the language Klingon that's used from Star Trek, you know, and they translate things into that for the fun of it. So that there'd be no heter to, because there's no Eis Lasis Lashem in translating the Torah into Klingon. Nobody actually speaks it. And the same thing. And unfortunately, that's true. When you translate it into other languages, the Goyim do have access to it as well. That is actually why it says that that's actually one reason why it says when the Torah was translated into Greek, then 3 days of darkness came down to the world, and it used to be there was a fast on Ches Tevis when they finished the translation. Because, yeah, one reason is because it made it available to the Goyim, and now they're able to distort it and to claim it as their own. It's true. But on the other hand, you know, that cat is kind of out of the bag already. It can't be helped. And the fact is we're doing it for the sake that there are Jews who otherwise wouldn't be able to learn Torah, and now are able.
But the Torah, it's Hashem commanded the Torah to be written in Shivi Lashon in the Har Evo.
That's a one-time thing. On Har Evo, Hashem said to write the Torah in 70 languages. That doesn't mean in general that there was a heter to write it in other languages according to these opinions. And by the way, you should know that there's actually a machlokas among the Rishonim what exactly it is that was written on those stones anyway. Not everybody agrees that it was the whole Torah and in all 70 languages. There are opinions among Rishonim. I think Rav Sadia Gaon, for example, says that maybe they only wrote the Aseres HaDibros, or maybe they only wrote a list of the 613 mitzvahs, and a couple of extra things that deal with that talk about how the Jewish people have to conquer Eretz Yisrael and dispossess the inhabitants and whatever. Not necessarily do they write the whole Torah word for word. Okay. Tanan, more on this topic of saving things from a fire. We learn in a brisa, habrochos, if a person writes down brochos, meaning, for example, Rashi says the words of Shemina Esrei, elsewhere Rashi says that, and we learned this earlier in the Masechta, also Rashi says over there, it means, for example, the brocha, the nine brochos of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, of Rosh Hashanah and Musaf, where you have the psukim of Malchus, Sechronis, and Shofaris. Anyway, in those times, and again, psukim obviously are part of Torah Shabbat, but brachas are part of Torah Shabbat Peh, and at that point, they still were not supposed to be written down. Later on, in the times of the Goyim, again, you have Eis Lasis Lashem, so they started writing down. You have the Siddur of the Siddur of Reb Amram Goyim, and later on, the Siddur of Reb Sadia Goyim, and from then on, it became accepted that you can write Siddurim, but not earlier than that. So this is a brachas, v'hakamein, and then you have kameis, where you have, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that you write a kameya, and sometimes you write different psukim, or different names of Hashem, or malachim in it, or whatever, and you hang it around the person's neck, or other body part, or whatever, to cure them of some illness. So, af al pi sheyesh ben osias shel shem, even if they have in them letters of Hashem's name, which can either mean actual names of Hashem, or it can mean, some of the Rishonim say, it means, like, for example, the same way in the Siddur, where they don't always write out Hashem's name, yudke vovke, in full, sometimes they write two yuds, let's say, two yuds, or then sometimes in some manuscripts they have three yuds or whatever to represent Hashem's name. So that would be according to this osias shel shem. Even if they have in them many things in Torah, they write in them psukim for Shemira. Nevertheless, in matzil and oitzim mifnei adleika, you're not allowed to save them from a fire because they're not considered to have the kedusha of Torah, since it's only individual psukim. Elam mistrofim b'mekayman hein va'askur esehen. So you allow them to just be burnt where they are, them together with the names of Hashem that are in them, because you weren't supposed to be writing them in the first place. Mikan Omru, based on this, the Chachamim said, Kosvei brachas kesofei Torah. People who write down brachas are like people who burn the Torah, because if there breaks out a fire, you're not going to be able to save them on Shabbos. So it comes out, you've caused words of Torah to get in these brachas to get burned. And the Gemara tells, Maisa be'echot treya kosev b'tzidon, and it happened once in the city of Tzidon that there was a person who was writing brachas. So they went and informed Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel went to check out and find out whether it's true. What happened is, as Rabbi Shmuel is climbing up the ladder, apparently the guy was sitting on the second floor of the house and doing this writing over there. So as Rabbi Shmuel is coming up the ladder to find him, the guy realizes he's in trouble. The guy realized that Rabbi Shmuel is coming up. So he took a book of brachas that he had written. Tumos, Rashi explains, means kvutzes kontresim, a gathering of booklets. The normal way of writing things in those days, in Rabbi Shmuel's times, the normal way of writing things was in a scroll, like a Sefer Torah. They even found some years ago a fragment of a Gemara that was written like that was written in columns on a scroll like a Sefer Torah. Later on, they invented what they call a codex, which is more like a book that we're familiar with, which has individual pages that you can turn. So a tumus is basically like that. It's a collection of booklets like that made with individual pages like we're familiar with them. In English, you have the word tome, which is bepashtus related to this word tumus. Anyway, so this guy took this book of brachos that he had written, v'shikon seifel shamayim, and he put them into a basin of water in order to erase the writing, so this way he won't get in trouble with Rabbi Shmuel. Ubaloshen as amalei Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel told him these exact words: Godol oynesh ha'achrim min harishon. You should know the punishment you get for the second thing you did, destroying them by putting them in water, is even greater than the first one. Because after all, you shouldn't have written them in the first place. But the fact of the matter is, if you did, maybe it would have ended up getting burnt, maybe not necessarily. Fires don't always break out. As opposed to like this, you went and destroyed them b'yadayim. So therefore, you should know your punishment for that is even more severe. Anyway, the point is, we see from this braisa, you're not supposed to be writing, or you weren't in those days supposed to be writing brachas, because again, there's the possibility that a fire might break out, and then they're going to have to end up getting burnt. And bechlal, at that point in history, you're not allowed to write down Torah Shebal Peh. Again, later on, es lasis lashem. So therefore, we're allowed to write down brachas, and therefore we have written and printed siddurim. Okay. Bomenei resh galosa mirava baravon. The Reish Kalusa asks Rav Bar Rav Huna a question as follows. All this time we're talking about when these Sfarim, whether they're in Lashon Kodesh, whether they're in other languages, all this time we're talking about when they're written in ink, in black ink. What about if they're written in other things? Hoyuksuvim b'sam, v'sikra, b'koymus of akankan time, b'loshon ha-kodesh. What if they are written in, all this time we've been talking about, they're written in other languages, or they're part of Torah Shabbat Peh, like the brachas, but they're written in ink. Now, what about the other way around? They're written in Lashon Kodesh, but instead of being written in black ink, instead they're written with sam, sikra, koimus, and kankan time, which are various kinds of other inks. We learned about them a couple of parakim ago. Sam is a yellowish ink made from a mineral that contains arsenic. Sikra is a red ink. Rashi described over there that they used to use it in his times to paint window shutters. Kumos is gum resin from a certain kind of tree. Kankan toim is something that they use to blacken shoes. We talked about Rashi and Tosfos over there discuss exactly what kind. It's some kind of chemical, either copper sulfate, iron sulfate, whatever. So those kinds of things are not as permanent as ink that's used to write Sifrei Torah. So Tosfos points out, they do have a certain permanence to them. It's not like you write in them and they immediately disappear. But the fact of the matter is, they're not as permanent as Dioi, and they're not the kind of thing that you're supposed to be writing Sifrei Torah or Kitzvei HaKodesh in. So what would be the din? Matzilin ois mifnad leika in matzilin. Are you allowed to save them from fire on Shabbos, bending the rules of Shabbos to carry them out to a mavoi she'enim foolish, or not? And the Mesh Galusa says, Tibori Lamanda Amma Matsilin, Tibori Lamanda Amma Matsilin. Actually, my question would apply according to both Rav Huna and Rav Chista. The machloikas we had before on Amud Aleph, whether you're allowed to save them on Shabbos, where Rav Huna says no and Rav Chista says yes. So the Mesh Galusa says, my question is according to either one of them. I'm asking the question according to the opinion that you can't save them, namely Rav Huna's opinion. You would say, because they're written in the wrong language. They're written in Targum, they're written in some other language. Therefore, there's no heter to save them on Shabbos. Here, after all, they are written in Lashon Kodesh. Matzilin, maybe then you are allowed to save them. Odilma, Or maybe you could ask the other way around. Afilu lamad omer matzilin, maybe even according to the opinion of Rav Chista, that you would be allowed to save ones that are written in Targum. Hani mili heich dechtivu b'dyoy. That's only when they're written with black ink, demikayim, which lasts a very long time. It can last almost indefinitely. You have, for example, think of, you know, Dead Sea Scrolls are a couple of thousand years old and they're still readable, you know, and they were written in d'yoy. But if they're written with Sam or Sikra, etc., given to Loy Mekayim, they don't last as long. They don't last as long as ink. Loy, then maybe you're not allowed to save them. So that was the question. Omalai ein matzilin. So Rabbi Barav Huna tells him, you're not allowed to save them. So the Resh Galusa asks him, v'horav Amnuna tana matzilin, but didn't Rav Amnuna teach a braisa that says you are allowed to save them? So he tells him, okay, if it's taught in a braisa, then it's taught in a braisa, which means Rashi says in some other place, this expression is brought, you can see on the side over here, Maseres Hashasa quotes over a dozen places in Gemara where it says this expression. In some of those places, Rashi explains that what we mean by itanya tanya, very nice, there's a braisa, but I'm still sticking to my opinion because I don't believe that the braisa is saying what you think it does, or because I have a different braisa that says the other way around. In this case, in fact, the Mephoshim point out, I mean, if the Resh Galusa knew the braisa, then why is he even asking the question? The point is that, in other words, there could be more than one way to understand the braisa that we're going to quote now. So therefore, Rav Huna is saying, just because you understand the braisa a certain way doesn't mean that I have to understand it that way. Okay. My Tanya, what braisa do we see that addresses this issue? As we learn in a braisa, there's no difference between other books of Tanakh and the Megillah. Megillas Esther, that is. Ela shasfarim nechtavim b'choloshen. The difference is that other books of Tanakh can be written in other languages. This is like the Tanakama in the Mishnah in Megillah that we had before. But a Megillas Esther, dafka has to be to have the Dusha of a Megillah, it dafka has to be written in ksav ashuri, not in some other kind of script, on parchment and using black ink. Otherwise, it doesn't have the kedusha. Now, Tosfos discusses, we've learned before that a Sefer Torah, for example, also has to be written on parchment. Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities that. First of all, maybe we're talking about here about other books of Tanakh. In other words, we're saying among the books of Nach, you're allowed to write the other ones on other materials or using other inks or whatever, but not a Megillah. The Megillah is an exception. Or that Tosfos says, another point is also when you get down to it, Megillas Esther does not have any names of Hashem in it. Therefore, the only way to give it Kedusha would be to write it the proper way, Ashuras Allah Sefer Obadiah, as opposed to other Sfarim, which have names of Hashem in them, and therefore, even if they're written in other inks or on other materials or whatever, they can still have Kedusha. So this Braisa would show, therefore, that you're allowed to write them in other languages, and the Resh Galusa apparently understood, or Rav Hamnuna understood, that it also means, besides that it can be written in other languages, it can also be written in other inks. But it's not really a solid proof, because after all, it doesn't mention other inks. And in fact, there are Rishonim who take out the whole thing, my Tanya, because it's not really much of a proof, since it doesn't mention the other inks. Okay. Bominate of Huna Bacholov Merab Nachman. Next, Rav Huna bar Cholov asked Rav Nachman as follows: Sefer Torah she'ein bo the laket shmonim mechamish osius. What if you have a Sefer Torah? It was written as a proper Sefer Torah, but now most of it is worn out. We're going to say later in the Gemara that 85 letters is the minimum that can be considered a Sefer, because there are 85 letters in the parasha of Vayhi ben Soya, which the Gemara is going to talk about later, is considered to a certain extent a chumash of its own, a Sefer of Torah of its own. So what if you have a Sefer Torah which is so worn out that you can't find, if you look through the whole Sefer Torah, you're not going to find 85 intact letters. Could go in Parashas Vayhi ben Soya Oren, which would be the size of the Parashas Vayhi ben Soya. So most of the Sefer Torah, the letters have been rubbed out, and you don't even have 85 letters left. Matzilin Oisim Epnad Leiko Ein Matzilin. Or you're allowed to save it from a fire on Shabbos, carrying it into a chotzer, into a mavui she'enim afulosh, or not, because the fact is it's so worn out that there's not even enough letters in it to constitute a sefer of Torah. So that's the question. Amale, so Rav Nachman tells him, why are you even asking about a Sefer Torah in that situation? Why don't you ask about the Parasha Vayihi Sayaharon itself? If that Parasha is written by itself, does it have enough Kedusha to be saved from a fire on Shabbos? So he answers like this. If Parashas Vayihi ben Soya is in other words, the question is, you should ask like this: what if Vayihi ben Soya ha'oren itself was written all by itself, and one letter of it is missing? So you don't have 85 letters, because the whole thing is 85 letters. So yeah, let's say one letter was rubbed out, and now you only have 84. Are you allowed to save it on Shabbos? Ask that instead. So he says like this: if you have the parasha Vayihi ben Soya is missing one letter, so Rav Huna Bar Chalup says, then I have no question. Of course, then you're allowed to save it. The kibin de ispe has koris, because the fact is it does have names of Hashem in it. Even though it doesn't have 85 letters in it, matzilin, you're definitely allowed to save it. My question is, what if you don't have, there's not enough letters left in the Sefer Torah that you can even find 85, and none of them are names of Hashem. So therefore, you're bad on two counts. You don't have 85 letters, and among the 84 letters that are left, none of them are names of Hashem. So are you allowed to save it? So Rav Nachman tells him, in that case, you're not allowed to save it. So he says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, Targum shekosvei mikra, the words in Tanakh that are written in Targum, that are written in Aramaic, if instead you wrote them in Lashon Kodesh, so you have, for example, there are, in Chumash, you have the words, as the Gemara is going to say soon, you have the words Yigar Sahadusa, near the end of Parshas Vayetze, when Lavan and Yaakov have set up their monument over there, and Lavan calls it Yigar Sahadusa. So you have two words in Chumash that are in Aramaic. In Nevi'im, you have a Pasuk that's in Aramaic. You have, we say it in Krishma Shalomit, Kidna Temrun Lahoim. It's a pasuk from Yirmiyah. In Ksuvim, we have parts of Daniel and parts of Ezra that are written in Aramaic. So what happens if a person wrote those, if a person translated those back into Lashon Kodesh? So let's say a person wrote out a Chumash Bereishis, and he writes over there, Lavan called it Gal Eid, instead of writing Yigar Sahadusa. So Umikra Shekosra Targum, or the other way around, if you have something that was supposed to be written as Mikra, that was supposed to be written as Lashon Kodesh, that you wrote as Targum, the rest of the Torah, or Ksav Ivris, or if it was written in Ksav Ivri, as we said before, Matzilin Mipnei Adleika, such things you're allowed to save from a fire on Shabbos. And needless to say, the Targum in Ezra and in Daniel and in Torah, all of those things where you have parts of those Sfarim that are written in Aramaic to begin with, that those are allowed to be saved from a fire. So the question is, so Targum Shabbat Torah, my Nihu. Now, what are the words of Targum in the Torah? The whole Targum in the Torah is only the words Yigar Sahadusa. Now, there's no 85 letters in that. Yigar Sahadusa is only 9 letters. And we're still saying that you're allowed to save it. So this implication seems to be, it doesn't matter whether there's 85 letters or not. The answer is Kitanyahi Lahashlin. The braisa means that those letters can count towards the 85. If, let's say, you have a Sefer Torah where most of it is worn out, and you have elsewhere in the Torah, you have 76 letters, and then you have the letters of Yigar Sahadusa, which is another 9 letters, then that counts towards it, and you have total 85 letters. Or even if, actually, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, that even if, let's say, you did, as the braisa is saying over here, let's say, instead of writing Yigar Sahadusa, you actually wrote the Hebrew equivalents. You actually wrote, in your personal Sefer Torah, you wrote the words Gal Eid. Same idea. If you have 81 letters elsewhere in the Sefer Torah, the whole Sefer Torah is worn out, you have 81 letters left, plus you have the 4 letters of Gal Eid, that will count towards the 85 letters so that you can save it. But not just the words Gal Eid or Yigar Sahadusa by themselves. So we have the question, Hani Shmoni Mechomesh Osius Mechunosis Oimufuzoris. The question is, when we're saying that you can save a Sefer Torah on Shabbos, if it only has 85 letters left, does it have to be that those letters are gathered together in one place in the Torah? You have 85 consecutive letters that are still intact, or can they even be scattered out around? Now, Tosfos asked the question, didn't we just say that the question was, Sefer Torah sheyesh bo lalak she'ein bo lalakit. Lalakit implies to collect them, implies that they're scattered all over the place, and we're saying that if there's not 85, then you can't, implying if there's 85, you could. The answer is, other Rishonim say that what it is that was a question asked to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman is the next generation after Rav Huna, after Rav Huna and Rav Chista. So they're not going to be bringing a proof from that. So they were asking a question later on in the next generation. Rav Huna bar Chalov asked Rav Nachman about. So once we establish that they can be scattered, then does it have to be 85, or is it good enough even if it was less than that? So Rav Huna amar mechunasis, Rav Chista amar afilu mechuzaris. So Rav Huna says they have to be all together in one place. Rav Chista says they can even be scattered. The Gemara says, "Maisvi, I have a contradiction." A Braisa says, "Sefer Torah shabala. If a Sefer Torah wears out, im yeshbo the locket shmonim uchamish osius. If you're able to collect 85 letters from it that are still intact, could go in parashas Vayhi ben Soya Oren, which is the equivalent of the parasha of Vayhi ben Soya, which again the Gemara is going to talk. We'll talk about tomorrow that it's considered a sefer of its own." Matzilin, then you're allowed to save it. Vim lava in matzilin. If not, then not. So the fact that the Braisi uses the word locket implies that it's scattered all over the place. You have a letter here, a letter there. Most of it wore out. You're still allowed to because it's 85 letters altogether. So Tiyuv to Rav Huna, that would be a contradiction. And Rav Huna, who says that. No, the parasha of Vayhi ben Soya is altogether, but the point is because Vayhi ben Soya has 85 letters, therefore we use that as the standard to determine the minimum size of what's considered still, yeah. So the question is, if we're saying the locket, that implies they're scattered all over the place. If they're scattered all over the place, then that's against Rav Huna. Rav Huna says they have to be the 85 letters to save the Torah, have to all be in one place. The answer is Turgum Rav Chista, Alibid Rav Huna Batevis. The answer is Rav Chista explained how Rav Huna would understand it, that lalakit means to collect different words. In other words, the idea is, it's not you have a letter here, a letter there, you have a word here, a word there. Rav Huna would agree that as long as you have whole words that are intact, then you're allowed to save it on Shabbos and then carry it out to a Mavoi She'enim Afolosh, even though you have a word here, a word there. Rav Huna does not require that all the words are consecutive, but he does require that it's not just a letter here, a letter there. There has to be something readable over there. Okay. So actually, I guess we have a couple more minutes. We may as well go through the Vayhi ben Soya HaOren thing. So Tana Rabbanan, Vayhi ben Soya HaOren Vayema Moshe. The Pasuk says, when the Oren started traveling, then Moshe said, Kuma Hashem. So Parashazu also HaKadosh Baruch Hu Simonius Milamayla Olamata. The Hashem made for it Simonim above and below it. We have the backwards nuns that are before and after it in the Sefer Torah. The reason is to tell you that this isn't the proper place of this parasha. Really, this parasha of Vayhi ben Soya should have been earlier in the Torah when it describes how the Jewish people are traveling, how you have this machina travels, that machina travels. At that point, would be the appropriate place to put in Vayhi ben Soya. So therefore, it has nuns before and after it to show that it's not so that's out of place. In fact, actually, the Balaturim and Rabbeinu Chaye say that one reason why you have nuns and they're facing backwards is to represent it should have been 50 parashas psuchas and stumas earlier. If you count back 50 parashas psuchas and stumas, you come in the middle of the section about the begolim in parashas Bamidbar, and that's where it should have been. Rebbe Yomer Loimen Hashem Uzer. Rebbe says that's not the reason why, because it's that it doesn't belong over here. Elam Pnesha Sefer Choshev Hufnatzmai, because Vayhi ben Soya is a Choshev, a Sefer of its own, and therefore it's marked off with the nuns before and after it. What makes it such an important sefer of its own? One point is there's a couple of things in it. One is that we see from it the importance of Avas Yisroel, because we say V'yanusim b'san echa m'panecha. Rashi says anybody who hates Hashem hates the Jewish people. So we see the other way around, anybody who hates the Jewish people automatically hates Hashem. So we see the importance of it the other way around, of Avas Yisroel. There's also the idea it has in it period of Rivia, because Shuv Hashem Rivavis Alfa Yisroel, that when there's thousands and 10,000 of Jews, then the Shechina rests among the Jewish people. So there's a lot of different things. In fact, Maharsha says one reason, if we say that it's a sefer with Ne'atzma, that's why it's marked davka with nuns to represent the idea. There are chamishim sharei bina, there are 50 gates of understanding of the Torah, and even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have all of them, only 49 of them. It's marked with nuns to show that even though this is only two psukim and only 85 letters, nevertheless, it still has all of the chokhma of the Torah in it, just like any other sefer of Torah. And therefore, it's marked by nuns. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Kaman Azla Hada Amr of Shmuel Bar Nachman Amr of Yenison." which opinion is it that, according to which of these opinions, is it that Shmuel Bar Nachman says, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, the Pasuk says, Chatz Va'amudeh HaShiva, wisdom, which means the Torah, carved out her seven pillars. So Shmuel Bar Nachman says, Elu Shiva Sifrei Torah, that refers to the seven books of the Torah. Kaman, Karebi, that would be according to Rebbe, who says that Vayihibin Soya is counted as a sefer of its own. So you have Bereshis, Shmos, Vayikra, the beginning of Amidbar, by Hebin Soya, the end of Bamidbar, and Dvarim, so that makes seven Svarim. Now we said before that the Tanakama of the Braisa had said it's not a separate sefer, but we're just putting the nuns to show that it's not in its proper place. Which Tana is it that says that? Reb Shimon Gamliel. That is Reb Shimon Gamliel. The Tana Reb Shimon Gamliel. Asida parasha zuchite orkami kan b'tikosev b'mekoyma. In the future, this parasha is going to be removed from where it is now in parashas Bahaloscha and put where it belongs in parashas Bamidbar. The Lama Kosva kan. Why was it written over here? Grela hafsik ben pur. In order to separate between the first punishment and or this first bad thing that the Jewish people did and the second one. What's the second one? Is Vayhi Ham Kimasonim. It says the people were complaining and Hashem made a fire break out and burnt some of them. Puronus Rishona Vayisu Mehad Hashem. What is the first Puronus? The fact that the Pasuk says they traveled from the mountain. They traveled from the mountain of Hashem. And Va'omer Abchama Berchanina Shesoru Me'achre Hashem means they turned away from Hashem. Rashi says what it means is like this. Right after that, we have the parasha of the Misoinanim, where they complained and they were complaining that we don't have meat, etc. And the whole thing developed from there. Rashi learns that what it means is even during the 3 days that they were traveling from Har Sinai, already they were starting to complain. Already they were having in mind to start to complain. So therefore, the Vayisu Mehar Hashem is the first Puranos where they're already getting ready to complain. It's the Eid of Rav, but still they got the Hosaf Suf, yeah, but still that then affected the rest of the Jewish people as well. So that's how Rashi learned, that it means that the problem was that during those 3 days, they're already starting to complain and grumble against Hashem. Tosfos says that no, what it is the fact that it says Vayisu Mehar Hashem, that itself is the Puranos, namely that they're so eager to leave, Har Sinai, Tosfos brings from the Medrash, like you have kids that are eager to run away from school. Good, we're done with school, and now it's recess time. So they say, the Medrash says, like the Jewish people were saying, you know what, the longer we stay at Har Sinai, the more and more mitzvahs we're getting. Let's get out of here as fast as possible. That's the Puranos, Rashi says. The Heichan Mekoyma, what is the proper place where Vayhi Ben Soya is supposed to be? Omer of Ashi B'Dgolim, it's supposed to be in the parasha of the Dgolim in parashas Bamidbar. So the idea is, in other words, Vayhi Ben Soya is put in the middle over here in order not to have three Puranos one after the other. In order this way, you don't have the Vayisu Mehar Hashem and the Misoinanim and the Vasafs of Hashem Kibbo, the whole thing of Kibbo Sativa. So in order not to have three in a row, that then it makes it look like the Jewish people are now confirmed in Averis, then therefore Vayhiben Soya was put in between in order to break that up. Whereas according to Rebbe, Vayhiben Soya is a chumash of its own, and therefore that's why it's marked with the nuns. Okay.